So, you know, I was on a family WhatsApp group, and I mean, I've got a brother-in-law who works for a multinational firm, and he was fortunate enough. He's head of global operations for IT, and he sent a message the other day going, and he was, by the way, going to be working from New York, but he got married, and he's now working from Kentucky, from home, mind you. And he said, we got the first one in the office, the first COVID-19 in the office. That might be the one in their office, but New York is currently facing a crisis. More than 25,000 positive tests, 210 deaths. Brooke Spector, a very good morning to you, sir. Associate editor of the Daily Maverick.
Good morning, Keno. What a heck of an introduction that was.
Yeah.
Death and destruction everywhere.
I mean, it's crazy.
And it's sort of end times all of a sudden. Oh,
yeah,
my,
well, I think, you know what? They're different types of people. There are people who look at this and, ah, man, you know, it's all be over. We've had the plagues and we've had this. We've not seen anything like this. And I'd rather err on the side of caution and say, operate as if you have it, as opposed to, oh, don't be too stressed about it, because it's the don't be too stressed about it that then allows people to phone into radio shows like this and go, oh, can I walk my dog? No, you can't. Can I take my bike up the mountain? No, you can't. There's a thing called, you know, being stuck at home with your family for 21 days.
Well, as you know, like most people and like many of the people you've been talking to, we laid in enough groceries. We didn't go berserk,
yeah.
But we have more baked beans than we're ever going to need, I suspect.
Well, that's going to be more. That's going to be very uncomfortable if you're only going to be getting, yeah, a lot of baked beans. But okay.
And tin tuna. I have goodness, I'm not quite sure what possessed us for that. but, you know, we will follow the instructions. My wife isn't teaching because she's at home. The school is closed. Both of my kids, one in the U.S. and one in Cape Town, they're trying to do their teaching via Zoom or FaceTime,
yep,
or Google Hangouts,
yes,
or any of the other ones. I think they settled on Zoom as the most comfortable.
Yes.
The two of us here, we spend our time looking for information about online teaching methods, especially in the arts, that we can forward to them, because this is a game changer for a lot of people in the way they do things. But to slide back to New York City, where you started, it isn't just New York City. It's the state as a whole.
Yes.
A neighboring town, New Rochelle, was especially hard hit, and they ended up having to send the National Guard in to help a beleaguered and overwhelmed civic administration and police force there. But out of all of that, the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, who, if you watch CNN, you'll realize is the brother of Chris Cuomo, and both of them are the son of Mario Cuomo, who used to be governor of New York State 30 years ago. He's become something of a national star because his briefings are so filled with empathy and human warmth and outrage. Donald Trump's briefings have had to change their scheduled times so that he wasn't appearing in conflict with Andrew Cuomo. That yesterday, for example, he said, gee, thanks to the Federal Emergency Management Agency for agreeing to send us 400 ventilators. That's no help. We need 30,000. What are you going to do? You're condemning 26,000 people to death. Thanks a lot. Now, that kind of rhetoric actually strikes home with people because they go, yeah, it could be my grandmother.
Exactly. Exactly. And juxtaposed to Trump's inaction, his stupid science, not having a regard for science, as a matter of fact. The juxtaposition is just quite stark.
Yeah, no, but to be fair, the government, the national government, isn't just Donald Trump. If you were following the news,
yeah,
just in the last few minutes, actually, the Congress, Democrats and Republicans, House and Senate, have agreed on a stimulus package that is worth two. Are you ready for this number? It's got a lot of zeros. $2 trillion, which by my feeble calculations, something like 50 trillion rand, which is really a lot of money.
It is.
And this includes stimulus aid to corporations, and it includes benefits to states to help with those that are overwhelmed by medical emergency needs. But it also includes the plan to distribute, I think now the figure is $1,200 per adult and $500 per child in emergency aid to trigger the beginnings of a resurgence of purchasing stuff.
Yep.
This is much bigger than the stimulus package that came out during the financial crisis of 2008-2009. And the difference is important. That was a credit freeze up. I mean, the banks stopped lending and nobody was able to borrow. This one is a collapse in demand, and the way to deal with it, the economics of it are pretty logical, straightforward, and simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
You give people money, and then they will burn a hole in their pockets with the money and go out and spend it.
But then the question is, if we did what China did right at the beginning, which was lock everybody down, make sure that you flatten the curve, how much of that money would you really be spending? So I'm not saying that the federal government isn't spending money. I've looked at those numbers, and my eyes were doing hula hoops.
yeah.
And there's lots of money. But government also admitted that they were very slow to react. And a lot of this emanates from leadership, Brooks. A lot of this emanates from leadership.
No, there's no question in my mind that criticism is well-founded. Because for a very long time, in epidemiological terms, what, a month and a half, 2 months, there was an effort to downplay it, to undercut it, to say, well, by April, it'll magically all go away. When the weather gets warmer, the gods will take care of it. You know, prayer will help. And all these things, which quite clearly were nonsense, you know, put a really, you know, pernicious nonsense even. And what makes it even more ironic is that the government at the transition point between the Obama administration and the Trump administration, they'd run us a really in-depth simulation. Let's assume that there is an epidemic that breaks out from a easily transmissible virus or bacteriological infection or whatever. What happens and what's needed and how do you control it and how do you deal with it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And the results of it were compellingly, well, we don't have enough of anything that we need. We don't have the supplies in place. We don't have the coordination and the organizational skills to manage this properly. And it's going to be really hard, absent some serious leadership, to affect behavior. And, of course, the Trump administration is largely getting a failing grade on all of those categories at this point anyway.
Well, I tell you what, we've just got an update here. The National Health Insurance, NHI, this is a thread that came through for South Africa. Health Minister Zweli Mkhize, he was on the SABC. He said the largest numbers, this has just come through. So largest numbers of scattered cases are in Johannesburg and the Western Cape. The scattered cases are around Cape Town itself. He says those tested positive must give a list of, he mentioned this yesterday as well, on the lockdown. Then he was talking about jogging. I saw something here. Some people have been asking us, Brooks, whether people can jog. And he says there's no problem with jogging, walking the dogs, and going to the grocery store during the lockdown. He says the lockdown is to avoid congregated large numbers. So people will be happy with that.
So are dogs.
Yeah. People have been going on about for the last 2 days, can I walk my dog? And I've been saying, no, man, stay at home. But he says, no, it's fine. You can jog. And you can take your dogs for a walk. But now let's get back to the United States. For those who've just tuned in, we chat to Brooks Spector. He's the associate editor at the Daily Maverick, a man who's got a lot of experience, especially with the United States, a former diplomat, an analyst. And we've been chatting about New York, New York State, the fact that the governor of New York State has been very empathetic. He's been saying it as it is, and he's certainly been overshadowing the president of the United States. So they made sure that they don't really get those two addresses clashing. In the juxtaposition with that is that the daily COVID-19 briefings with Trump, especially in his off the cuff marks, have been a bit chaotic because the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases head, Dr. Anthony Fauci, regularly has to correct what the president has to say. But we've spoken about New York State. What about Louisiana?
Look, I mean, this is the state government in Louisiana, as I haven't been following it quite as much because the New York City, New York State, and California sagas are infinitely more, you know, astonishing. But a state like Louisiana does not have this under control either. And let me just add one other thing before we shift into the micro version. You should be troubled by the fact that in yesterday's briefing, Donald Trump said, well, you know, or in remarks after the briefing, I guess it was, we can maybe we can just roll all this back in time for Easter so people can go to churches. Just when the flattening of the curve, as it were, is beginning hopefully to have some impact, boom, you're going to just trigger it all over again. It's quite astonishing. Your comment about Anthony Fauci is compelling. This is a man, after all, who was one of the first researchers and administrator researchers who said, we have got to confront, deal with, and manage the HIV and AIDS crisis back in the 1980s. And he took serious measures to make that happen. He's been through six presidents in the succeeding years and has survived them all. But he's had real trouble with the video clip that I'm sure everybody has seen of him covering his face with his hands at one of Mr. Trump's more egregious comments. He's also one of the heroes because his part of the briefing always makes sense. It's clear, it's concise, it's considered, and it doesn't go into these wild, extravagant, extraordinary, extemporaneous rants about who knows what. And, you know, you get bizarre things like the president extolling the virtues of chloroquine. Now, those of you who traveled in the tropics or lived there, you know what hexachloroquine and chloroquine are for. They used to fight off malaria. They don't really much anymore because the malaria parasites have mutated so that they had chloroquine for lunch. But you already had people who took the president's advice rather literally in Arizona and killed themselves with it because the first chloroquine they could find was the stuff you throw in your tropical fish tank to kill off parasites that attack your neon tetras and your angelfish.
It's quite enraging, actually. People having to deal with a crisis that's not only going to potentially kill an economy, but it'll literally kill people. And you hear you've been fighting HIV, AIDS. You've been telling people, let's get this controlled. You're now dealing with COVID-19. And on top of that, you've got to deal with irresponsible Tweedledum, who someone has actually voted in as president of one of the most powerful nations in the world. It just beggars belief. I cannot believe that.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you is that in the most, and this will make your day, I'm sure, you know, in the latest polls, something like 55% thought the president was doing a good job on the crisis.
Oh, my word.
I mean, you know, that puts a whole new spin on it. There are cynics who argue that if ultimately this gets brought under control, A, and B, if the economy rebounds successfully, this might actually help him in the election come November.
Yeah. Well, our president's seeing, I would love to see what the polls show about him. You know, we obviously worried about him wanting to speak to everybody, including the trees, and get everybody's consensus on things. But when he finally took that podium, initially, and he started speaking, there was just something very presidential about the way he went about it. And the last address to the nation, I think, was on point as well. And then he's backed up by Zweli Mkhize, who hands down, is probably the best communicator around this particular issue. So if this were a popularity contest, I reckon that Cyril Ramaphosa and some of his executive would come out tops.
Well, I mean, I found myself waiting for his address the other day, flipping back and forth to watch whatever might be transpiring in Washington, and then going back to whatever was transpiring here and trying to figure out whether presidential or executive messages were going to be clear and effective and yep. appropriate. And the local guy, he got my vote because
yep.
he also had something in that presentation which you don't always see in his speeches. They often sound a little too well scripted and technocratic and almost engineering like. I'm trying to yep. find the right lawyerly maybe, but there was a fair amount of human empathy and warmth in it for a change that I found compelling. I'm sure you follow the same social media channels that I look at, and
yep.
the people that you talk to and people I talk to probably overlap a bit. And the only criticism was, my goodness, why does this man be unable to tell time? Why can't he start his speech when he says he's going to? That's a pretty small question in the larger picture.
But an important one added as well, especially in times of crisis. We need to know. We need to know yesterday. But I reckon if you need to get your hand on the facts and you need to be able to make sure what you say is indeed what's going to be done, then that might take time. I think the second time around, he had Jackson Mtembo coming out saying, hey, here's a delay, this is why there's a delay, as opposed to the first time where everybody started making up memes.
If I were to offer a suggestion to the presidency, I hope you're listening, folks, announce the speech for half an hour after you plan to give it.
Yeah.
And then everybody will be astonished at the proactiveness with which you came up before even you planned to give.
Good point.
And then we all sit there and say, "Hey, my God, that man's running ahead of the clock." Can I just end on a final note for you?
Yeah.
I'm starting to think about. All right, this will pass. There will be death. There will be changes in things, and there's going to be a lot of suffering out of all of this. There's no question, and we have not yet seen its impact locally when it gets into informal settlements and more closely packed townships and so forth, where people necessarily are closer together and really don't have a way to self quarantine themselves except in a corner of one room, which is hard. But what are the things that are going to change in our society, both nationally and globally, as a result of this? Here's one prediction. There's going to be an awful lot of interest and an enormous explosion in the idea of online learning and the way technology is going to make this a whole lot easier and better for people.
Yeah, no, indeed. I have to sigh at this particular point. There's just so much to go through, so much to talk about, and so much to consider.
We're all going to be so much more intricately involved in the people in our households for the next 3 weeks.
Ooh, the divorce numbers, the babies. Oh, my word. Let's not even go there. Anyway, Brooke Spector, great chatting to you. He is the associate editor of the Daily Maverick.